I'm Terry Thornton. I'm Curator of Education here at the Modern. It's my great pleasure to welcome you to Tuesday Evenings at the Modern, which is a weekly lecture series. Next week, we have the artist Charles Gaines. He's based in Los Angeles. He's a longstanding professor at the California Institute of Arts. Gaines is a pioneer of conceptualism and a highly influential educator whose early groundbreaking work has been described as a critical bridge between first-generation conceptualists of the 1960s and 70s and those artists of later generations exploring the limits and subjectivity of subjectivity and language. For this Tuesday evening's lecture, Gaines will share his ideas, the ideas that have formed his long and influential career. I have to say I come across as many recognized, established artists who credit Charles Gaines as almost anybody as having influenced their ideas. So I hope you can make it back next week. I know some of you are here specifically for tonight's lecture, and I'm telling you that if you're missing out on Tuesday evenings, the price is right, and really the talent could be no better. I'm so proud to be a part of this program. We really do get in some of the best creative thinkers in the world here for these Tuesday evenings in Fort Worth, Texas. Tonight, for example, in conjunction with the 2015 Fort Worth AIA Excellence in Design Awards, we have Randy Brown, who's principal of RBA, Randy Brown Architects, in Omaha, Nebraska, here to share the work and practice of his recognized firm, which has received no less than 15 AIA national awards and is known for an approach to architecture that meshes modern design and an appreciation for the land and lifestyle of its region. The firm was included in the 2012 publication 50 U.S. Architects, Residential and Planning, a curated collection of award-winning residential and master planning work from leading American designers whose philosophies are rooted in the modernist doctrine or distilled in the vernacular precedents and whose meticulously detailed and site-specific projects focus on sustainability, technology, and the human spirit. Randy Brown received a Master's of Architecture from the University of California in Los Angeles. He was awarded an AIA Henry Adams Award, and his undergraduate degree was a Bachelor of Interior Architecture from Kansas State University. As a successful architect, Randy's expertise falls into three project types: cultural, dwelling, and identity. In 1998, he created Workshop, a 12-week summer architecture student-paid internship program, which includes bringing a worthwhile project to full fruition for its participants. Despite his flourishing practice, Randy finds time to promote art and design education. In 2003, he held the High Chair of Excellence at the University of Nebraska. He was also a 2001 National AIA Honor Award for Interior Architecture Juror and has been a juror for numerous state and regional AIA Honor Award programs, with this year's Fort Worth AIA Design Awards, of course, bringing him here tonight. So if you would, please join me in welcoming Randy Brown.
Well, it's an honor to be here tonight in Fort Worth to have these amazing buildings like the Ondo Building, the Kahn Building, the Piano Building, all within little walking distance here. That was an easy, no thought for me to make the decision to come down here and get to see this amazing architecture and the art inside of the architecture. It was a great day today getting to see all of the work that the architects are doing here in Fort Worth and some really amazing work. It was very inspiring, and I'm hoping I can bring that same energy tonight to you guys when I share with you some of the stuff that our practice has done in the last 25 years. To get a little bit of a handle of who's in the audience, could you raise your hands if you're an architect? Okay, put them down. Could you raise your hands if you're an artist? Could you raise your hands if you're an art patron? Those are the clients I want to, you guys should be talking to, architects. Anyone here, University of Texas football fan? Okay, I'm from Nebraska, and we're having the same issues that Texas is having right now, so we will talk afterwards about football for sure. My practice is based in Omaha, Nebraska. Nebraska is an Indian word. It means flat water, and it describes all the rivers in Nebraska. And then I have recently moved to Florida, and I found out that Florida has meaning too. It means let's blow it off and let's go to the beach, because that is the river of people in Florida, and I have to say it's very refreshing. Tonight I want to share with you this idea that I think is really central to my practice. And the thing is, it's all about finding the hidden potential in each project. As from an architect's perspective, hopefully you're getting a lot of work, but it sometimes becomes monotonous, mundane. You get the same project type over and over again. But I think that's the real challenge and the real opportunity is to keep trying to push yourself as an architect, push the boundaries, pushing yourself forward. And the question we always ask ourselves with each project is, what is the potential of this project? Where do we want to take it? Where do we want to explore? Where do we want to put our energy into? What do we want to get out of each project? So tonight I'm going to share with you some strategies that we employ with some of our projects to try to really push the boundaries and make maybe parts of the project incredibly special and unique and different. So my practice, I started in 1989, had one employee, and we've grown to as many as 15, 16 employees, and never again do I want that many employees. I really like having a small staff. I really like collaborating with two or three people. I really believe that there's an energy when you get two or three really focused people together and you share ideas and bounce ideas off each other, and together working as a team, you can create so much more than just the individual all by himself or herself. Jeffrey Booth had me come speak a little while ago, and he did this introduction. I'm an ordinary person. Our firm is very ordinary, but hopefully we're doing some decent stuff. But we take these really unglamorous projects, like boys clubs, like strip malls, like suburban homes, and remodeling jobs, and bathroom and kitchen renovations. And through pushing the process, trying to find the hidden potential in each project, he said we're really bringing a lot of increased value to our clients, to their bottom lines, and to the investments. And I really hope that that is what design does in the end, is it really brings a lot of value to the investments that our clients are making. Here's an example of an everyday ordinary project, a boys club. They had about eight people coming to the boys club, eight kids, and they wanted us to do a renovation. And we said, well, the first thing is, what can architecture do for you? What can design do for you? I said, well, what are the problems? And they listed out that the kids don't show up because their backpacks and coats are always getting stolen. They mentioned that there were no toys to play with, so they were all locked up in the room. They mentioned that the people that worked there were all hiding in their offices, not out with the kids. So I said, there's three problems architecture can tackle. And we came up with this idea of just like a retail reception desk with a bag check and a coat check behind it. So they had the security of their stuff. We have little, here's all the toys sitting there like you could buy them in a store. And they could check them out. And the third thing was we had eyes of the, we got the employees out of the offices and working behind this desk, supervising, seeing the people. And we used some really inexpensive materials, some paint, some light. The end result was when the renovation got done, about 3 months later, they had 500 kids coming on a daily basis to the boys club. And they had to hire more staff, and they could do more programs. And it was the value that design. We solved some problems. We made it fun for the kids to come there. They could see that there were fun things to do. And it just, one kid told another kid, told another kid, and it grew exponentially. To me, that's the power of design. And creating little playground structures inside the building, instead of buying those plastic, pieces of toys, you make it with materials. Let the kids play. Here was another very common, it was an art installation, and we all found objects, and we challenged ourselves without any money to go out and find stuff. And the art installation was all about talking about what is the problems of suburban, the incredible suburban growth we're having, suburban sprawl in Omaha, Nebraska. We have different maps they're plotting showing the size of the city in 1920 and 1930 and 1990 and 2010, how the city had just exploded. We started talking about the issues of smog and just using these found objects in car parks to try to communicate some ideas about some of the dangers of suburban sprawl. And we did it all with found objects. The wood deck was actually taken down from a suburban house that we were renovating, so it was all free materials. And in the end, it had a message. So the hidden potential was find stuff for free. It's there, and you can make great stuff with it. We've experimented with suburbia. This is a current project that's about halfway built out. It was high-density, single-family homes, modular. And how do you do it in a way to compete with the home builders at the same price points, similar square footages, but very, very small, you know, 0.18, 0.20 acre lots, very close together, very high density. Experimented with these materials, with the modular building these in factories, cement board siding, very simple modular floor plans, easy to put together. This home sold for $340,000 using some tricks of glass storefront materials, native grasses. We have rooftop gardens, recycled materials, low E glass, skylights, a lot of natural daylighting. But some of the hard things I've been trying to sell is like PV panels or rainwater collection systems, gray water systems, geothermal. We're having a hard time still trying to show people that there's benefits. The upfront costs are more, but there's long-term value. That's one of the challenges I've been having with this project. Very inexpensive house. That one cost $290,000. This was a contractor's house, a contractor's office that we did a number of years ago. Just a very normal project. He built it with his guys in like 2 weeks, but he wanted design. He wanted to express the process of construction. My own house in Omaha, Nebraska. It was a 10-year project. I used students. I built it with my own hands. It was a love affair. It's something that I still need a lot of therapy. And that's why I'm not actually even going to talk about it much tonight. I can remember the day I fell off the scaffolding, almost killed myself framing this elevation here. In Nebraska, there's all these skywalks that link buildings in the downtown because it gets very cold in Nebraska. So they had these skywalk systems. So I always thought it'd be really fun to do it on a house, to do a skywalk. And so we built our skywalk connecting the old house to the new house. This is a master bedroom suite here on the right, outdoor spaces on the left. We had these students, and I've worked with students for years and years and years, and they come in the summer and they have very few skills, and we teach them how to build things and make things, and we had some kids that were welding, and we have 13 different staircases. They came to me one day and said there was a problem. They were putting the tension in the cable, and the pipe actually bent. And they said, well, we're going to have to redo it. And I said, but you guys are going to go back to school tomorrow. I'm going to have no one to finish it. So I said, it's perfect. Pull the next one so it bends in exactly the same way, and you're done for the day. So it was, and they were able to do that. So there's so many accidents and mistakes in this house that sometimes they were beautiful mistakes, though. And that, for me, this project was really working with students, working with teams, doing it for 10 years. And the hidden potential on this one was really just the potential to keep going and to try to finish it. And then the great thing was I sold the house after 2 years on the market. And it was a great learning experience, which means you didn't make any money when you sold it, right? But boy, I paid to learn a lot of things with that house. And I'm still paying for it with my therapist. So I have a lot of slides to show, a lot of projects. Simplicity is one of the things we talked about today in the jury. Sometimes the best projects, to find the hidden potential in projects, it's how to simplify it down to what's the essence of the project, what it is you want to explore, what's the heart of the project, and don't get sidetracked with all the other stuff. It's like, really come up with, there was a beautiful diagram of a house that we saw today. And that's how they started their presentation, with a little drawing diagram, and it captured the essence of what that house was about. And I thought, that is really this idea of having a really simple idea and understanding your simple idea and then just pushing that. So I think that's a real key to the hidden potential. This is a house. It was an experiment. Every project I've ever done has been a team of people. This was a house I designed entirely by myself. I did every working drawing, every model, every sketch, every CA call. I spent 4.5 years of my life trying to build a very small house for my parents that are 75 years old. It was the first time I've ever designed a project for them, a residential project for them. And this is the result. The people in that video are what I think my parents were in their youth. And the house is all about being young at heart. The house is all about connecting to nature. The house is all about just having an amazing experience, enjoying your life or what's left of your life. And for me, that's one of the powers of architecture, the powers of design, is that we can change how people think, change how people feel. There's an emotional connections, and the house, when the light comes in at different times of the day, there's experiences that I could never have dreamed or imagined. But I always tell them, oh yeah, that was my plan. That was my thought. So the hidden potential in this project, we had a decent budget. It was like about a $1.1 million house, which for me was a ton of money. It's far the most expensive project I'd ever worked on. But for me, the hidden potential was to keep trying to make it simple. Keep trying to make it minimal. Don't get, even though you have money to spend, how do you keep it buildable? So I started working with clay. I started thinking about just a couple bars. I had my mom's wish list as one bar, and my dad's wish list was the other bar. And my mom wanted small ceilings, my dad wanted super tall ceilings. And it went all the way down the list like that. They couldn't have been more divergent in their thinking. And so we came up with this idea of these two bars of clay. They start intertwining, intermixing. That was really how the shape of the house evolved. And also relating to the site and the views. And the north winds are coming in. And so the house is curving to really push those north winds around the house. And we had these wonderful views of the nature. It's backs up to a 600-acre native prairie state park. So it was just a wonderful sight. And it was not my idea. to have an all-white house. That was my parents' idea. And at first I hated it. And then later, I've come to realize it was a brilliant idea, and it pushed me in a way that I've never been pushed before. So it was interesting in how the house curved around and engaged the landscape. And the very top, the topography was very oval-like. And so we started designing this curved house really around the existing topography, making it try to fit with the landscape. So we have these wonderful views of the native prairie, but it's also facing directly north with all the cold winter winds. My dad wanted entire glass on that side, and I said, we can't do that with the wind, so we have to just frame these vignettes and these snippets of these views. And we did this really thick wall on the north side, and it's like sometimes 2 feet, 3 feet thick, filled with spray and foam insulation, so it's a super insulated north wall. And then we have all 1-inch insulated glass panels, all custom windows. But for me, I love to think about the details of fencing and doing vertical pipes to create a fence that was really not that expensive. Thinking about the facade and how these forms can start pulling apart and the apertures and the openings, making the window frames ourselves, trying to make it as simple and as clean. So you don't see all of the detail. You just see the mass, the form, the sculpture, the space, the light, the views, the reflections of materials, the lighting. They had a dog, and so we had to have fencing around the project, which at first I thought that was a negative, and later I found it to be an opportunity. So the fencing is in an oval that defines the top of that hill there, that existing oval topography. We have issues of sun, too, in Nebraska, but here we use the technology of the glass that goes from clear to transparent as a way to cut down on that solar gain, heat gain. Every once in a while, you see these little diffusers on the floor. We didn't Photoshop anything out of these images. I try to hide everything you can possibly hide. The outlets, to me, it's the acne of architecture, those things like light switches and outlets and diffusers and lights up in the ceilings. I try to get rid of it all. I hate it. Hide the lights. So people ask me, where are all the outlets at? Well, these floating cabinetry, there's outlets actually under on the bottom side of the cabinetry, so it meets all the codes, just perfect. I spent hours and hours trying to come up with a pattern for the marble flooring, and we ended up coming up with 3 different sizes, and they just all staggered the joints in a very artistic way, so it really relates to the curves, but it wasn't, every piece was not custom cut. This is looking from the pantry and the appliance garage that you must have in houses today. This is looking from the inside looking out. And the back side of that is that appliance garage that goes up and down. Yeah, so I was walking through like the building here today and noticing that the mullions, you don't see the mullions on the floor, and it's all integrated. And I guess that I probably subconsciously have learned so much from coming down to Fort Worth about every 5 years and touring the buildings here, because I see a lot of the same detail, thinking maybe that's where I got those ideas from, or how you do glass handrails that are so clean, how you make it soft by curving all the drywall, hiding all the light fixtures. Making the stairs a really interesting experience of this glass by hiding the light inside so it shines out at night into the glass stair treads. Framing the views of nature, getting that contrast. And the amazing reflections you get on the white walls from the marble tile, I thought was just amazing. Something I definitely planned. So I go from my last house project to my very first house project, which was a small renovation I did for myself and my wife that was a studio residence. We found this solar building from the 1970s that was literally looked like it had a fire, it was falling apart. We found it in 1992. They wanted $450,000 for it, which was a lot of money back then. And it's only like 1,500 square feet. So we toured it, we looked at it, we made them an offer. We made them an offer because it was residential zoning, not commercial zoning, and we knew that they would never be able to get the zoning changed. We made them an offer of $70,000. And they laughed at us. They said, no way. A year went by, a new real estate sign, a new real estate agent. We went in, we toured it. They wanted $250,000. We made an offer of $70,000. They laughed at us. Said, oh, the university is going to buy it across the street. They're going to get it rezoned. But I knew the planning department. I knew the neighbors. They would never get this rezoned. This was going to have to be a single-family residence. 3 years go by. A new sign is up. They want $160,000. I came with my real estate agent. I had the real estate agent fill out the all the right forms. The offer looks so official. $70,000. They countered at $80,000. And we said sold. There was no reason to argue any further. We had waited a long, long time. And maybe the patience is something that, as architects, we need to learn to have more of. But that's all we could afford. So, hey, sometimes the mother of necessity is the mother of invention. And that was definitely the theory behind this project.
When architect Randy Brown and his wife Kim first bought their house, it was an abandoned preschool leftover from the energy crisis of the late 1970s. At first sight, the rundown building must have looked more like a teardown project than a restoration.
What we did is we moved in, we camped out, and we built the project when we had money, when we had time, when we had funds. And we didn't even have plans. We were just kind of going with the flow. One piece influenced the next piece, influenced the next piece. We started with this wonderful open space, the existing concrete floors. You could see it was a Montessori, so they had the demonic circles of, I don't know what that was in the middle there. I try as I might, I could not get the tape residue off of that concrete. So even in the final pictures, you can still see some of these things that we just couldn't get rid of. But we started building the sculpture in the middle because, hey, we needed a place to eat, a place to conference. We needed a space to sleep, so we made a loft upstairs. We're going to maximize the space using very inexpensive material, plywood, 2x4s.
Separated from the dining room by a curved wall of bookshelves, its blonde wood desks and concrete floor are bathed in light, pouring through the home's southern-facing windows.
I think the key is the contrast. You have very rough materials next to very refined materials. The shell, just white walls, almost like a museum. Placing artwork in the proper locations really tends to create this finished look.
The finished look not only creates a sleek work environment, but works harmoniously with the home environment. Back on the home side, a step down from the office area is the living room. The black leather furniture mimics the pieces back in the foyer. The austere color choice underscores the home's architectural details.
Those green books on the shelves for any young architects out there, those are called suites catalogs. And that was that's where we found all our products before Google and before internet and everything. But I just had a ball building the stuff myself. This is, to me, minimal architecture. You make some 2x4s, some 2x12s, you put it together, and you think about every detail, every connection, every joint.
I tried to use the architectural details to connect one space to another.
The dining room's table can also serve as a conference room table, once again challenging traditional divisions between home and office. Randy used exposed architectural elements, such as raw studs and bare electrical outlets, to define the space.
You can see through it. There's interesting inventions like the dining room table is a piece of glass that actually slides through the wall. The kitchen has what we
basically experimented ourselves. The stainless steel, I thought it would be amazing to have this sink coming right out of the stainless steel countertops. And then I saw how much scratching that the stainless steel had. It was a great way to educate the clients about maybe some of the things you don't want to do with your project. This whole thing was just a learning experience for me. We were stuck with this crazy X-bracing in the middle of the project, and obviously we can't get rid of it because it was the way to resist the shear loads. And I hated these things, and I finally figured out that, you know, I needed a handrail. I already had a handrail here, so that's a good place to put the staircase to go upstairs, and just working with what's there, taking advantage of what you're given.
Floating above the dining room, almost like a magic carpet, is the Brown's bedroom loft.
I had this great experience, like the first time we actually got to sleep up there. In the morning, we were awakened by this wonderful white light coming in, bouncing off the ceiling. And it did feel like we were just hovering off the ground.
Even the family dog matches the architectural aesthetic. And then later, we moved the... We were legal because you could have a couple employees because of city code. But then we moved out, became illegal, and I put my office up there. And the quote at the end sums it up from the Wall Street Journal. They published it. They said, I said, hey, this is the process of construction. It's under construction. It expresses this is who I am. It's what I do, young, innovative. I want to do things new and different. That's what the space is all about. It's fresh. It's a bit risky. I could fall off. Well, all those code violations, of course I could fall off. You know, you can only get away with that stuff when you do stuff for yourself. But and that's maybe the lesson, is to build for yourself, invest in yourself as much as our clients. I was framing one morning, Sunday morning, and I loved seeing all these pipes in the walls. I said, that's art, that's sculpture. Why don't we celebrate that? So I put the big hole there, put some lights behind it. Then I started thinking the toilet sculpture, let's backlight the toilet. Then I had a dentist's office, and they had this old knee action valve they were throwing out. So I recycled that, and I said, let's do a sink with this knee action valve to turn it on and off. And I had more clients come out of using the bathroom and ask me, how do you turn your sink on and off? And it was just a great way to talk to the clients, to break the ice, to say, we got to think about things a little differently, and maybe a knee action valve isn't such a bad thing. And it really... Architectural Record published it, AIA National Honor Awards. It was kind of my first project at 25 years old. And I really think it was worth the investment.
They needed a space to function as both a work and home environment and saw this design as the best means to achieve it.
We really are challenging those boundaries of a traditional working relationship or a traditional home environment. And there's always those people that are looking backwards. We're those people that are looking forwards. And we're interested in designing environments for tomorrow.
And I did better when I sold this one just in the last year. We put it up for an auction, and I sold it for more than $70,000. Sold it for $150,000 because I still couldn't get the zoning changed. This is what I hate about suburbia. All these boxes of band of glass, band of brick, band of glass that are surrounded by a sea of parking lot. They tear down all the trees. They're so flat, so desolate, so sterile, one of the words I use today a lot. I wanted to do a building that was a reaction to this. So the hidden potential of this one was I took control of the project. We became the general contractor as well as the architect. So we were able to really stretch the budgets. And we really experimented a lot with building forms, shapes, geometries, technology. For us, this was really a great learning project that was built in 1998. We really wanted to do the opposite of those flat buildings. We wanted a building that pushed forward, pulls out, sucks you in, sculptural, artistic, connects to the site, has this wonderful creek that wraps behind it. And so all of these geometries are actually relating to our setback lines. And we're trying to crack the building open so the light and the views, so when you're inside, you're connected to the outside. And you're outside, you're connected to the inside. And then we wanted the spatial experience to totally change. The users really found that the central corridor, this two-story volume of space, became like the connector. They had more conversations, more meetings, more they bump into each other just as they are going from one space to another. So it really was this the heart of the project, a very functional space. Trying to bring all the materials from the outside to the inside. Trying to experiment with minimal amount of details and still having it be about the space. Integrating the HVAC, the ductwork, the lighting into the project. Just creating experiences for people that was new, radical, different. And so the people of Omaha thought it was really weird. They put it in the paper as a weird office building. It was on a talk radio show one morning. This friend, Carrie, said, go to Z92. I said, why? I said, they're talking about your building on the radio. And so I got on there. They were having call-in, and people were voicing their opinions about it. And then on the other side of the spectrum, Architectural Review puts it on the cover of their magazine. So I love the dichotomy. I love the fact that sometimes architecture can engage the public in talking about design and what is design. And I really wanted to, the purpose of the project was to shake up the city a little bit and do something that hadn't been done before, and we definitely did that. My kids say that I have ADHD, and it's probably true because if I do a project once, I never want to do it again, and I always want to constantly doing new and different things. So a construction firm now, an architecture firm, interior design firm, we added a development company also to the list. And it was my brother-in-law, my father, got together and decided to do this development company. And our first project was to do an addition to this building. And I really feel like vocabulary is one of the hidden potentials. If you can start a project knowing what the vocabulary is, you're so far ahead in the game. And in this case, to do a strip mall, I said, okay, we're going to match the vocabulary of that office building, but do it in a different forms and make it work for the function. So we had this idea of the strip mall being extruded out of the existing office building. So we were coming up with canopies for their signage, trying to think about them more as canvases, or works of art, backlit. Creating little benches in front of the ephus walls there. Really trying to get that push-pull so the entrances are recessed. Using native grasses as the landscaping. So the development company started going really well. And what was our project type? For me, the worst project type of all, strip malls. But that was our niche. I don't know why, it just happened. That's what the need was out in the community. And I figured in the end, someone was going to design these buildings and build them, so why not be us? And then every month we get the rent coming in. And it's a lot easier than being an architect and having to always look for jobs every month. So we started asking ourselves, can strip malls be inspiring? How do we do stuff that's still artistic? And this is a rectangular building, masonry, but we talked to the city planning people, and they said, we really want these buildings that are cute and have lots of different things and a lot of different material changes and a lot of landscaping and planters and things, but they had no codes. They had no regulations yet. So we were able to do a very modernist building. I wanted to make it look like an old barn part of it, but my brother-in-law didn't go for that. But then I had all these metal studs in the office. We said, what if we just use metal studs and started creating screen walls? And they bought into that. So it was a really super inexpensive way of creating some rain screens using galvanized metal studs. And 10 years later, it still looks amazing. And then this little wall here is actually an outdoor patio. We had this little space. We didn't have a tenant, but I said, maybe we'll get a cafe. Maybe we'll get, you know, a restaurant or that could use that outdoor space. Because it was in the landscape zone, but we were able to, we had to maximize the building size, but we were left over that little space. So I said, you know, let's just do it as a corner of the building. And they went with the extra money. Because for us, it was, this space was would be the, that was the potential of the project, was to create one nice outdoor space. A bar moves into that corner and uses the outdoor space. A year after they move in, this city enacts a no smoking inside of bars. And so all of a sudden, all of the bars want to have outdoor spaces where their patrons could go and smoke. And here we had already had thought that in. Nowhere in my mind had that ever been an option. I was thinking about how do you make fun buildings that people want to experience? How do you make it like a billboard? But the function, sometimes it works out in your favor in the end. And it really did add value, having that outdoor space. So 2-3 years later, we go across the street. We want to do another one of these strip malls. The city enacted some zoning regulations, design criteria. And now you cannot have blank, uninterrupted lengths of more of 100 feet. You need to have changes of planes, changes of materials, canopies, porticos, shades, colonnades, variations in roof lines. Materials should not have a synthetic or plastic appearance, and no backlighting. And I don't know where they came up with those ideas. I don't think they like my building, though. And this is one of the hidden potentials is, okay, so you're given this challenge. It's an opportunity to do a different type of a building. How do we satisfy all of their criteria in a totally different way? So we took it as a great challenge. This is what the pictures they showed us. This is what we want as strip malls. These are great strip malls. And this is what they got. I have variation. I have materials changes. I have changes of elevation. We have colonnades. The wonderful structural steel, all painted primer red, perforated metal instead of the plastic. Still use some of the galvanized metal on the side there. But it's a strip mall, but we wanted to really push the idea of facade and make it something that's sculptural, something that you could still engage with, having sitting areas out front. It's very human scale. We have some planters built in. And people ask me, like, well, some of this stuff just looks like it has no function to it. But that little screen on the very right-hand side coming down, that's hiding all the drain pipes that then, for the roof runoff, it flows down into the roof gardens. So sometimes a lot of the functional reasons for the building became aesthetic reasons as well. But we were driven by that, how to make this building function well, but also be a work of art, be an experience for the people in the community. And the one thing I'll say is these strip malls rented up very, very fast in the area, much faster than the other strip malls. And they've been, knock on wood, 100% leased since we put them together. So that was something that was, I think, design is helping that investment. Here was a challenge. This was a big project that we did not do across the street. This is Village Point Lifestyle Shopping Center. And you have all the different materials, all the different palettes of colors of ephes that you have to use. We wanted to do a building within their area. So they said, you have to use our palette of materials. You have to use brick, colored ephes. And I said, okay, the material palette, this is our opportunity. This is the hidden potential in the project. Let's use those things, but let's do them in an architectural way. Let's do them in a way that's very rectilinear. So we created, again, these walls of glass or walls of metal. We defined the areas where the signs are going to go. We perfectly worked out the staggering of those seams on the metal panels. So I said, we're never going to do a great museum, so let's think of the strip mall as an amazing museum. Let's put the same kind of effort and thought into the details, into the registers, into the lighting, into the landscape. We were able to programmatically think about a two-story strip mall because of the they basically had a walkout basement underneath, and so we proposed a daycare underneath, and that's what we did end up getting, and it's worked out perfectly to this day. A strip mall with the bar up above, with the balcony, the daycare underneath. This is, for me, this is mixed use. Chain link fence for the ivy to grow up, so we get these green walls that have really come together. This idea of the metal being these wrappers that kind of wrap around the facade, tying it all together. It's a strip mall to some, it's a museum to others. That was our goal. Sometimes the hidden potential is you take one element of a building and say, okay, we're going to work on sun shading. We're going to do some really cool sunshades. We're going to come up with screens and columns that don't quite touch the horizontal planes, and we're going to use that language. And this is a 100,000 square foot building that we designed, but the only thing I'm going to show you is it's all about the steel and the canopies and the steel detailing, because that's where we pushed the architecture in this one. We had our hands tied in a lot of other areas by the client. I think as architects, we always think that I have no budget and I have no time, so what can we do with small projects, really small projects? 100 square or 1,000 square feet, 500 square feet, stores, restaurants, bars, interior spaces. I always say the hidden potential of these projects is still paint and drywall. There's so much you can do with studs and plastic to create interior spaces. This is an example of about 15 of our interiors projects we've done over the last 10 years.
Gold line's gonna tell me where the light is. Gold line's gonna tell me where the light is. Take our hands out of control. Take our hands out of control. Tell me what you saw. There was a crowd of seats inside.
There's so much to be explored with little projects with not a lot of money if you just think about it and work and put the effort in. Another little project where we had a 3,000 square foot office space, not unlike a lot of projects we saw today, and we said, let's narrow the focus. Let's think about a conference room, a reception desk, a hallway that creates the character, that creates the impression. That's what this project is about. We're going to spend all of our time, all of our money, all of our efforts in, you know, 1/5 of the space of the project. So we came up with some angled geometries. They related to the form and form making to create space. The story behind this one was it was all about a client that sold your personal data to businesses that want to market you. There was a specific number of zip codes that they marketed, and they have your name, your phone number, your email address, and they get these people in from China, Japan, Europe, and they try to sell them your personal information. So he wanted a space that was going to seem very impressive to international clientele. But we also kept trying to relate it back to, okay, you're about numbers. You're about these zip codes. Let's make the architecture talk about, you know, what your business is about. And your business goes up and down, up and down. So let's make the ceiling of the space actually be, the angles actually relate to the curves of your growth and your profits each month. So we were trying to carve out spaces in this wall and pull the walls back and create these niches for, like, your coats and hats. Trying to create rooms and spaces that would be energetic and dynamic and help to let them sell what they sell. To impress the visitors that were coming in, because it's trying to impress them with numbers is really difficult. But space and color and light and energy and emotion, I said, that's how you're going to get at making sales. That's how you're going to open up people's minds. That's what the power of architecture is about, the power of design. Thinking about a simple door, but you make a cut, you hinge it, pin it top and bottom, it becomes a really interesting experience to go into the president's office. The most inexpensive, you know, metal material, but it relates to the Nebraska farming culture. I got to quickly move on because we're running out of time. This project, The Hidden Potential, was all about satisfying the code requirements. The University of Nebraska came to us and they wanted to build a building on the river. And they said, of all the firms in Nebraska, you were the only one we thought of that was crazy enough that probably could build a building on a river. It was a laboratory research center. And it was definitely a backhanded slap in the face, but we thought, wow, you have $100,000, you want us to build something on a river. Amazing. And then I saw today this log building floating down the river. I thought, God dang, everyone's got the same project type now. But I did this one, about four years ago. So the challenge was to build a really small research station that would be able to test the water quality and find out why our streams were becoming so polluted from urban encroachment, from beef feedlots, from all of the drugs and steroids that are in cow manure that's becoming into the waterways. So the scientists wanted to have this laboratory in the river. So we went to the Corps of Engineers, and they said, absolutely not. There's no way you can build on the waters of the U.S. But we didn't stop there. We kept analyzing the area that they owned. We went out there, and we had it surveyed. We found out that the river had shifted, and the river was now going through the University of Nebraska's property. So they owned that piece of the river, that little section. It was a very small section. So then we had an argument. We went back, and finally they agreed that we could build. But they said, you have to build it 1 foot above the 100-year floodplain, which was about 35, 40 feet above the level of the water. You have to make it ADA accessible to get up to it. You have to think about how you're going to stop when the ice and stuff comes down the river, how it's not going to just knock this building down. So they gave us a lot of code issues that we had to solve. And so the design was all about this vertical building, making it as small as possible. But we thought about it as an outdoor pavilion, as a place that people could come and observe the river as well. And we could educate the people about the pollution. And they have signage and they have video installations there. So it was both a working laboratory as well as something for the public as well. And for us, it was a wonderful sculpture, a wonderful idea to build on the river. Our structural engineer, I told him the idea of, well, we want to do these really thin pipes to lightly go down, so it's not this really heavy sculpture. And he said, but where are you going to get the shear from? And I said, well, what if we make the ramp all 2x12s, you know, double them, triple them up, and we can use that ramp as a way to create the shear? And he's like, oh, that might work. And in the end, he made it work for us. Sometimes structural engineers can be your best friends. But how to create this light sculptural building way up off the river? It's just like a little clubhouse. But we start thinking about ways of PV panels to bring the electricity, capturing the rainwater, having the batteries in it. The way the clubhouse works was there was this open area that really runs right through the building. There's desks and places for specimens on the right-hand side. The left-hand side has all this area for water tanks. And essentially, and there's outdoor spaces here for seating. And the back side of that became the signage, which was central to the university that they can, you know, create their image there. But the way the building worked was there's all these tanks inside of it. And they pump river water up into the building, into the tanks, and they have frogs, they have fish, they have live animals in the holding tanks. And the water from the river is continually running up through the tanks and then back down into the river. So it's a real lifetime, real life situation of these are the animals in the water, and then how is the water affecting the animals? And it has to work in all seasons of the year. And then architecturally, I wanted to mark that 100-year floodplain. So I have this slot of space that actually shows them that is the 100-year floodplain. And then I have this piece. I really want to architecturally bring that form down to the ground. But what this is like the battering ram, because the river's all going this direction. So if you have logs, you have ice, you had to protect that structure with something. So you kind of had this shield that functionally really, well, 4 years later, we still haven't had any problems with it. So it is really the protector of the project. And in all seasons, you know, we got to think about what are the details? What are the size of the panels? What's the materials? I have two more quick projects I'm going to share. The hidden potential of this one is all in the process. The clients came to us. They couldn't raise but $150,000. They wanted to renovate an old building. They wanted to make a museum and art gallery for an artist that had recently died named Kent Bellows. And the only way we were able to do it was we hired inexpensive student labor, and they spent the entire summer working on the project. And we called it Artifacts. Kent Bellows This is an amazing pencil rendering. He does this hyper-realism and pencil. It was just phenomenal. This is one of his drawings if he was thinking about death. And unfortunately, he committed suicide at the age of 58 years old. But he had the studio that he worked in, and it wasn't that great at all. In fact, the outside was boarded up. Nothing to speak of. The staircase was so out of code that we were going to have to rebuild it no matter what. But he had all these things, like hidden behind walls, he had backdrops for his paintings. On the floor, he had all these markings about all the different paintings, how he had set them up. He had backdrops throughout the space. So there were all these artifacts that we wanted to save in the project. So we identified for the clients what are all the artifacts, all the way down to his coat, always hung in this one spot. And so all during construction, we kept the coat protected in that one spot. The outside, Kent had installed the glass block up above. And the parents absolutely required us to keep the glass block. They said, you can put glass and storefront underneath it, but that glass block must stay there. So what a challenge to try to come up with a way to scaffold and keep that up while we pull out that wood-bearing wall and slip the beam in underneath. And I had 5 architecture students come up with the system to do it. And they welded all of the steel, all of the structure, to create a storefront, to create the signage, to create outdoor benches and spaces within that storefront. All the while, we were able to keep that really important glass block in place. And so this became a community art gallery. But better than that, it became an after-school mentoring program. They bring students in, and they learn about art, and they make art, and they sell art, and they have shows here. And it really became this vehicle for the community. And our architecture was not much. It was a couple things, a few walls, a staircase. We left the floor as is because it was beautiful. We got some lighting. $150,000 we tried to stretch really far because we had to do all new electrical systems, all new HVAC systems. This was the library on the second floor for his book collection. Trying to make walls really thin. This is a picture of Kent sleeping. This is something he thought about in 1991. I see in my mind this mysterious museum filled with paintings I haven't done. And that's what makes the whole trip worthwhile. And little did he know that his building, his space, would be all these people making paintings that he didn't do, but it's all because of him that they were able to do it. And so to me, again, the power of architecture is to improve the community, to create spaces where kids can really improve their lives through using art. And it was a really heck of a fun project that summer. We talked a lot about it in the jury today about big projects and how hard big projects are, and I totally agree. This was a huge 300,000 square foot warehouse meatpacking facility, and I only focus all my energy on the corporate office and the sales office, and that's where we tried to make architecture, make design, make continuities, bring light. This project was all about bringing light into the building because it didn't have a lot of windows. It didn't have a lot of exposure. And the screens on top of the skylights, I think I realized today, in Louis Kahn's building, that's probably where I got the idea from. I just didn't realize it until today. But I love when you can think about every piece of steel in the project and sculpt every piece of steel and build the models to understand the project. And we love doing pencil drawings now because of Kent Bellows. And we were studying the light and how to bounce it around within the space, within the skylights, thinking about the detailing of the stairs, the stairways to heaven. Here was a conference room and how to bring light to the lower level. We created a light shaft, and then with the light shaft, we started creating light scoops, all to bounce the light around. This project is all about this light, open, white, sales, corporate America that's making millions. And the last project was an advertising agency. They came to us with no money and said, we want to make an image. We want it amazing and beautiful.
Website.
So having been a contractor for like 15, 20 years at that point, when we did demo, I would salvage a lot of things. I would keep windows and doors and things. And I said, the only way we can do anything with your project is let's just totally clean up the shell, make it this beautiful warehouse, return it back to the bones, and then let's put some desks in there and let's build these three idea pods. Because you need places to go to get away, to think, to have conferences, to have meetings. I said, we're going to use all found materials, and that's going to create the aesthetic. And so me and a couple of guys in the office, we built these pods out of just very rough, unfinished materials. But in the end, it had texture, it had pattern, it had character. It really kind of worked with the space. It worked with the colors. It's busy, but in a very simple way. The clients have used these rooms for multitude of things. On their website, they've put the picture of each one of the people using that as a backdrop. They've continued to push that as an image. It's part of their logo. It's all over their website. So the architecture created an identity, and it was done with all free materials. Now, we were blessed to have this wonderful old building, though, with the wood trusses and the wood ceilings, and basically we cleaned it up and worked with what was there. I'm going to end with all of our video, all of our photography is done by one guy named Farshid Asasi in Santa Barbara, and I think he does amazing work. And I just wanted to leave you with the idea that hidden potential, it's finding the heart of the project where you know you can influence people, where you know you can make something amazing. You can push yourself maybe farther than you thought you could go. Because in the end, design, we have this opportunities to change people's lives. The emotional impact of architecture, the functional impact of architecture, the things we create for people are real estate investments. And there is so much value in the work that we do as architects and our design. We need to be getting paid better. We need to be charging more. And we need to be celebrating what we're doing. And it all comes back to the hidden potential of every project. Make the most of every project. You cannot go wrong. Best of luck. Thank you. As we go outside, if anyone wants to ask me questions individually, I'd be more than happy to answer any question except for why I do it.